Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, Dave's a little under the weather, so I think I'm going to need a strong performance from defense and special teams. You up for it?
I am up for it, man. I'm going to try to do a better job than the offense did in that game on Saturday night.
Fantastic. Well, let's start with the offense. What did you see or not see from the offense?
The biggest thing that stood out for me was the loss of Michael Williams. I was surprised that Brian Vogler was the blocking tight end because of all the time we talked about that in the preseason podcast. And so he was the guy that was out there the most. And I felt like in numerous situations, we were blocking the wrong way. Either Ryan was making the wrong call at center, or Vogler and Cyrus, for the most part, was making the wrong call on the end. But every time we would leave a speedy linebacker on the edge unblocked, and we would block down to the right, and they just had us shattered out here on the left, they would disrupt things in the backfield. And I went back and counted at least six or seven plays in the game where even if they didn't make the play in the backfield, they disrupted the play enough. And I think if, you know, an experienced tight end was out there like we were kind of accustomed to with Michael Williams, some of those negative plays would have been your typical 4 or 5 yards from Alabama. And so therefore, we were not in a rhythm, I guess is what I mean. And I think it started at the tight end position or the H-back between Michael Vogler and Jostin Fowler. I don't think as the blocking part of that offense, I don't think they had a very good ball game.
No, I think that's fair, and that's interesting calling out Michael Williams. I would definitely say we didn't gel. I would definitely say that we were missing blocks. If I were to want someone back from last year's team, I think I would go with Barrett Jones for the sake of the line calls. One of the things that we've heard in some of the press conferences and player interviews is that they were doing things up front that we had not seen on film, that we had not practiced. And so I wonder if a veteran caller of the defense or caller of the line blocking schemes would have impacted it. I do think, you know, and for all of our talk and if this is the Eat Crow portion of the show, that's fair. For all of our talk about Virginia Tech being beat up, which was true, and we did see that when they were on offense, and we did see that in their defensive backfield, but their front seven was pretty stout. And that's maybe the unit where they had the least injury, and they had a pair of 300-pounders at the defensive tackles that they ran some different stunts and some different slants, and they seemed to give us fits all night.
Well, they did, but it just wasn't a good game plan. I mean, not to go to the game plan for a second, they had no depth, and so the linebackers were undersized. And they gave us trouble on the edges because our tight ends and our tackles were not handling their speed properly. And it's not like they were super fast guys. The two inside guys, yeah, they played a good game. But guess what? There's no depth behind them. And if we would have just run right at them, we would have wore them down. And we didn't. And we didn't try to. And so I go back to the tight end thing. Just one example of a play here. On the very first series, it's 2nd and 5. We got 6 guys, 1 tight end of the game. They got 7 guys in the box. We choose to block down and let the speed edge guy away from where the play is going to go stay free. And either the tight end has got to chip him or the play has got to be a faster motion to that wide side away from him. But another thing that jumped out to me was how much we missed Chance Warmack. No offense to Airy, okay? It's his first start. He did okay. But the other thing I noticed is these offensive linemen were hat on a hat. They didn't try to help each other from the standpoint of a Chance Warmack would say, okay, I see this guy needs me to chip his shoulder. So I'm going to chip this guy's shoulder and turn him around for you. And I'm still going to go over here and block my guy. And yeah. Why can I do that? It's because I'm a 3-year veteran and I can do that. And these guys can't do that.
And not only am I a 3-year veteran, but I've been playing next to you for that long that I know just instinctively, you know, what's going on, where maybe you need an assist, where I have the capability, maybe the bandwidth to provide that. And we just do that in the normal scheme of the game. You know, we've played together enough that hey, I can kind of tap you on the hip as we're walking to the line of scrimmage. And you know what I'm asking for or what we're communicating. And you take guys out there that haven't played side by side, you just don't get that.
No, you don't. And I watched some of the media interviews of Cyrus, you know, leading up to the game. And these guys were asking questions like, how nice is it to play next to your brother? And Cyrus is like, yeah, I can just look at him and he can know what I'm thinking, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? Last year, you had a Chance Warmack on one side of Cyrus, 3-year veteran, and you had Michael Williams on the other side, 3-year veteran. And to me, you know, Cyrus was thrust in a difficult position, okay? Because guess what? I'm the veteran now with 15 starts on this side of the line. And I got a new tight end on one side of me and my older brother on the other side. They're both brand new, and it showed. I guess that's a more succinct way of saying that. It showed that Cyrus was the veteran, and he had nobody on each side of him to rely on.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's one thing in a social setting to kind of know what the other person's thinking. It's something else entirely, you know, literally in the trenches. And I'm not letting Cyrus completely off the hook. You know, I went back and watch some of the replay as well. And, you know, we had, I think, 4 or 5 penalties. I think it was 4 penalties in the game, and 2 were holding penalties on Cyrus. He Olay'd a couple of times. He looked thicker, and, you know, normally that might be a good thing. I wonder if he hasn't put on too much weight. I don't know. This is just me speculating. I'm not at practice. I'm not at in those venues. But I wonder, you know, we talk about guys reading their press sometimes. And, you know, I don't want to call the guy out necessarily, but, you know, and it's a one data point. That's all it is one data point. But there's enough there to make me think, hey, you know, maybe, you know, is he not all that he was last year?
Well, I think the small defensive ends gave these two tackles for Alabama problems because these guys were in the, you know, 240, 250 range. And there was, you know, on the interception that AJ threw, okay, literally the defensive end on Cyrus, you know, Cyrus raises up too high. He gets into his shoulder pads. He gets leverage. He's able to swim underneath him, get in AJ's face, and force AJ to throw off his back foot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, DeAndre White did not run his route properly, and I think that was a larger part of why that pick happened. But, you know, it's just the little things is that when AJ had time to throw the ball, you know, we threw the ball well. But
yes,
I think that there was way too much pressure in the backfield. And so Jostin Fowler, when he was at fullback, he did not look comfortable. There was one play where a linebacker blitzed between left guard and left tackle. Airy didn't see it. Airy blocked down. Literally, the linebacker comes in. Airy doesn't chip him. He goes to help Ryan. The guy dives at Jostin Fowler's feet. He gets on Jostin so quick, he doesn't know what to do. He can't do anything. The guy dives past Jostin Fowler's legs and tackles AJ in the backfield.
Yeah,
that should have never happened. That would not have happened last year with Michael Williams lining up at fullback.
Well, I would say last year with Fowler being healthy too. What, you know, Fowler's first carry, he got, you know, sacked and, you know, tackled in the backfield. And you even commented during the game, why was he looking down? Why was he looking down? He wasn't, you know, attacking the tackler. I think, and I went back and watched that a couple of times on tape. I wonder if he was not a little tentative on that knee.
Which is understandable, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, he's gone through practice and, you know, and some live hitting, but I think we take, you know, we kind of take care of our guys. He knows, you know, probably not going to get hurt. But in a game where people are diving at his feet and coming at him, and, you know, one guy was coming in kind of under control, you know, loss of control and did hit him on the leg, on the knee. And you know, that's what Fowler was looking at when he went to make that guy miss and go after the you know, try to gain some yards. And so I think he was a little tentative on the knee. I think that's normal. And I think that he'll progress as the season goes on. I want to go back to the line, and I want to ask you, I think two questions. And so let me put them both out here, and you kind of react to them. We did see Ari go out of the game. No report of injury. He was at practice in his normal position today, and we saw Kellen come in, and that was before, you know, the rest, before there was a wholesale substitution of the line. And so that's one question I just want to have you comment on. And the second is really the million-dollar question. Is this what we're going to get from our offensive line, or do you think there's opportunity for them to improve? So take those two items and do with them what you will.
I guess the first question for Ari, you know, you and I assumed in the Georgia Dome that there had to be an injury, but when we checked him out in the binoculars, you know, it was pretty apparent that there was not. You know, maybe if Kellen, you know, who knows, maybe Kellen was close enough to being that number six guy. Mm-hmm. And he is a senior leader, right?
Yep.
That maybe he was nipping at Aries' heels all in summer, and we just don't know that. And maybe it was just a close race that wasn't even really reported to the media. Maybe he was trying to send a message to Ari, because I don't know if it was Ryan's calls at center or Ari. Okay. Mm-hmm. But last year we were just blessed, right, with all the starts these guys had, right? Well, guess what? For all my beating up on Steen, I didn't see Steen make a single bad play. And I sat down and rewatched 80% of the ball game. And so unless he did it in the other 20%, I didn't see it. And so,
I read that he graded out. I don't know if the word was perfect, but he graded out with a very high score.
Well, I feel like right now Ari's strength is going to be running up the, you know, running forward, you know, pass blocking is probably going to be something he's going to get better at. I wasn't surprised we ran the ball 38 times with these guys. I just feel like, you know, there was just questionable blocking assignments on second and fives and second and sixes that last year's team would have gained 4 or 5 yards. Yep. And now you're looking at third and two and third and one. And you and I had a buddy that commented to us that, you know, Cecil Hurd had noticed in the second half, we had like, you know, consecutive third and 10, third and 12, third and 14, that kind
yep.
of stuff.
Yep.
And so, you know, they're definitely not going to, you know, be able to overcome that with three new linemen. But I hope it was just sending a message to Ari, and so that he can respond. I'm glad there's no injuries in play. I was also not impressed with, you know, with Austin Shepherd. I felt like Austin Shepherd, like Cyrus, did not handle the edge rushing very well. I think when the defensive ends and the defensive tackles were, you know, doing the crisscross technique at the line of scrimmage, that they kept doing that over and over again. And numerous times, both of our tackles were really struggling with that.
Yeah. Yeah, they really were. You know, we talked about in some of our preseason and our preseason guide, one of our watch items was around Ari and his play at right or left guard, and how many people would we end up starting at that position over the course of the season, and would he be when we go to wholesale backups, but would he come out early? Would he be the first one out of the game? And so that's something that we kind of had an eye on. And that's the way it played out in this first game. So that'll be something interesting to watch. Do you think this line improves?
I think they'll definitely improve. They're Ryan Kelly's a talented player. I think he'll improve. I think Ari will improve. Austin Shepherd's been there for a while. Austin Shepherd, to be fair, as you and I both know, we were not expecting him to be the right tackle. And then the tight ends, you know, I think Brian Vogler, you know, when he did go block somebody, did a good job. Sometimes I just think he blocked the wrong guy.
Yeah.
But once again, right, he's out there being the blocking tight end at 260, and that's not really his thing. You know, why did we do all this shuffling at tight end and switching numbers with the offensive lineman if we weren't going to see him until late in the ball game? So I think this bye week comes at a great time, because, you know, they really need to go back and think about who's going to be that starting blocking tight end. And even if they go back and go with, you know, Brandon, well, he's got no experience too.
Right.
And so my biggest concern here is the lack of experience to help out Cyrus. And Steen's so far on the other side, right?
Yep.
And so I think we're going to be frustrated for a few weeks here.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think we do get better. I think that's, you know, that's kind of an easy question. I think we do progress. It just becomes a question of the rate of improvement. I wish, you know, for all of our talk about the way the schedule set up and you know, having this week off, after seeing ourselves on Saturday, I wish that we played a Western Carolina or Georgia Southern or Georgia State or something on Saturday, just to get back on the field and get that taste out of our mouth, both as fans and certainly as the players.
Well, I think that these guys have what it takes, and I would much rather be going to Texas A&M with a bye week than them playing them on Saturday, right? Sure. So I'm glad we at least have a week to, you know, to work out some things.
If that were the menu options, yes. If I got to insert, you know, playing a Bobo, then I'd rather have the Bobo.
Hey, another couple of things I'll mention real quick is that I do think we talked in the pregame about you know, Coach Saban's respect for Frank Beamer, and when we were calling the final score, we didn't think the game would be in question, but we also thought that you know, Coach Saban was not going to try to embarrass Beamer. And I think you saw with 2 minutes left in the first half, no try whatsoever to do anything with clock management and trying to throw the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got a team that has sputtered in the first half, right? But yet you're up 28-10, and you need to establish some rhythm. And he didn't even try to. We just ran the clock out. I thought that was telling.
I was a little disappointed at that. We had timeouts as we were, you know, they went three and out, I believe, on that possession before. And so we had timeouts that we could have saved the clock, could have had about 2.5 minutes on the clock, and then gone into a 2 minute. And for all, you know, for all the talk that Saban has about taking advantage of the opportunities that are presented and playing not to the scoreboard, but playing to a standard and getting work when opportunity presents itself, I found it curious that we didn't try to work in a 2 minute drill, even if we just get down there to attempt a field goal and get our kickers some work, or to score the touchdown, because the game's still, you know, still a half of action. I would have liked to have seen. Now, later in the game, running it up, I think, would be, you know, something altogether different. But
right.
at that stage of the game, I thought that would have been an important touchdown and certainly gotten some momentum for the offense.
Well, what did you think about the running back substitution real quick? I was a little bit surprised that I believe D. Hart was the first guy off the bench at running back, and that was on the sixth series that he came in. And so I was surprised that D. Hart was going to be that guy. I thought for sure that, you know, that we would, you know, we thought we would see Kenyon Drake, who apparently didn't make the trip.
Yeah.
And so in that situation, are you surprised it wasn't Fowler?
Well, it was Fowler that came in and was the first runner after Yeldon, then Hart, then Tenpenny, and then Henry. And so I was surprised really up and down. You know, running Fowler, I think, kind of surprised me. Hart definitely surprised me. I, you know, we talked about Drake in the offensive preseason show, and we talked about, you know, potentially, you know, two sort of dots on him last year against Western Carolina.
Western Carolina,
and,
right?
And then some photos of him carrying the ball, and then he doesn't make the trip to Atlanta. There's a lot of speculation. He's working through some fumbling issues, which that's kind of correlated to the picture. Maybe there was something else, and so for whatever reason, you know, he was in effect suspended for this game, and so you just start to wonder: are those three? I hesitate to use the word strikes. But those are certainly three data points that connect in a way that, you know, is positive for this guy. And for all the talent that he has, it's just I find it aggravating. I would have loved for him to be the second guy off the bench. Hart, you know, we talked about him. I'm not surprised that he's getting carries. I just don't think they're going to be meaningful. And then Tenpenny coming in ahead of Henry surprised me a little bit. But, gosh, he ran really hard.
He did run hard, but I guess to your point, I felt like TJ Yeldon had to go too long, right? He went too many carries into the game before he got a breather, And last year, the flow of him and Lacey worked really well. And obviously, they're going to get this worked out. But I think I'll be curious to see who's going to be that number two guy.
Yep.
And apparently Drake was back at practice today.
Yep.
In his usual spot. But, you know, curious what we see 2 weeks from now. There, 2 weeks is a lot of time in the fall.
Oh, yeah.
For things to happen between the number two and number three running backs on the depth chart.
Yep. I will say this, and this kind of speaks to your point. There wasn't a rhythm. There wasn't a rhythm in the rotation pattern. And I don't know if that's really because Drake is the number two and he was being held out, or if there's something altogether different. But there didn't seem to be a rhythm or a pattern in how we used our backups, which is surprising because, you know, normally we are almost clockwork in that regard. And then there was a stage in the game where we talked about, well, we're just going to run out the clock here in the fourth quarter. And, you know, I made the comment to you, if we're just going to run out the clock, I don't want Yeldon to be the one doing it. And then, you know, of course, he continued to run the ball late in the fourth quarter.
For me, I thought we would pass the ball more. We talked about the veteran wide receivers. We talked about the veteran quarterback. We talked about Alabama, you know, just give us a couple seconds here and AJ can, you know, dink and dunk and move the ball around. You know, I remember specifically in the first half, there was probably to me the worst call is on their third series. We had a little pressure once again because I think the tight ends had wrong blocking assignments on the first and second plays.
Yes.
And so we've got a third and 16.
Yeah, run it up the middle.
And we run it up the middle to Jostin. So I guess he was the next guy up. And the announcers are calling that, you know, because of the pressure and the pressure that AJ's getting. And I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, I hope the coaches aren't sitting here saying, man, we can't block them on this pass rush. I guess my point is it wasn't like it was like an awesome pass rush. It was just like one guy back there just nipping at his heels. And I felt like we could have taken advantage of their secondary. And when we did complete passes, guys beat guys badly. And so it's like, why did we not take more shots down the field to open things up in the running game for this running game and the continuity that it needed?
I think, and this is one stat that I wish I'd looked up prior to the call, the number of runs versus the number of passes. To me, it starts to feel like we're manufacturing balance because this is a game, it appeared early on, that we're going to be able to pass against this team. When we ran timing patterns and, you know, we were able to get in ahead of the rush, AJ had a clean pocket and he was connecting. Now, sometimes I think we went after their best defensive back, Kyle Fuller, and I almost want to give him a game ball with the way that he played. And so I don't know why we repeatedly went after him, but I thought we had a clean pocket a lot of times and we could have run a timing passing attack, I think, all day long. And then that would have softened up the run later in the game. And so I'm a little disappointed. We just seemed discombobulated in our play call, almost like we were trying to, you know, hey, let's not get too out of balance. We got to run a ball a couple times now because we've connected on some passes. And we just never got into a rhythm. And so we would have, on a number of the plays that we punted, and we punted nine times, on a number of those drives, we had moved the ball. We had, you know, made a couple of first downs or made a really impressive first down and then just kind of got bogged down. And we never were able to string together plays in a way that, you know, we were hoping and certainly I would say expecting to see. I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes I think we go for balance when we should just go for what works.
You know, we needed that number of pass attempts, you know, to be in the 30, you know, the low 30 number.
Sure.
To me would have opened things up. Anything else on offense? Do we need to talk about the Blake Sims thing? I was very disappointed that we didn't see Alec Morris in this game.
I'm not surprised by it. I would not have been surprised by either guy. And, you know, we talked about that in our preseason show and had some write-up about that in our guide. I think we're going to platoon the position and sort of, you know, time after time we may be surprised sort of in that moment. But we're going to get two or three games into this, and a mosaic's going to start to present itself. I'm not that surprised. We were up in that game, so we're not going to bring in the passing quarterback. We're going to bring in the running quarterback, and I'm not surprised by it. One thing I will say, and we've talked about McCarron a little bit. He was 10 of 23, and you know, and his passing yards weren't that good. But one of the things that he said that really just demonstrates his leadership, and we've talked about his character and his leadership. You know, he indicated, a couple of his quotes. He said, "I'm proud of them," and he was talking about the offensive line. And he very clearly, this is a quote from McCarron, "You can put the blame on me." And so I just think that's some senior leadership right there, stepping up for his guys, taking some accountability there. So I give hats off to McCarron on that one.
Well, we're very happy for what Blake Sims has done for the program, as we talked about on the previous podcast. But I wanted to see some Derrick Henry action, and I was very frustrated when Blake Sims comes into the game for the last two possessions, that when Derrick Henry was in the game, he faked the ball to him twice, and then he just kept it himself. That was so frustrating.
Yeah, he did. Derrick Henry, when McCarron was in, twice missed on his blocking assignments, and coached up both of those occasions. So again, live fire. I think that he missed on a couple of blocks, and hopefully we'll see some improvement from him.
Anything else on offense before we jump to defense?
Who's your mini game ball on offense?
Man, that's a tough one. I would have to tell you, for consistency purposes, I'm going to have to give it to Kevin Norwood.
Okay.
Because Amari Cooper dropped some balls he should have caught. Everybody on the offensive line, with the exception of Steen, had lapses. The only one that graded out well on the offensive side to me was Steen and Kevin Norwood, because okay, Kevin Norwood didn't get many touches, but guess what? When he did, he was Mr. Reliable, tippy-toeing on the sideline for a big needed 3rd-and-14 or 15 or whatever it was. And so I wish he would have been in the game more with his senior leadership.
Okay, very good. I'm going to go Alton Tenpenny, just for the promise that he demonstrated. He seemed to be the hardest runner. Now, Yeldon has a style about him. He's not the physical runner that we saw in Lacey or Mark or Trent. Tenpenny seemed to be cut from that cloth. He just looks like a very physical, intense runner. And I think that's going to earn him a lot of playing time, because if you look at Yeldon, maybe even Fowler, if he's going to be tentative on his knee, certainly Hart due to his size, and I think Drake, given his makeup and his style as well, Tenpenny may be the physical runner that we're going to need. I know people say Henry, but I didn't see it from Henry. I saw it from Tenpenny. So Tenpenny gets my mini game ball. Tommy, let's flip the field and talk defense. What did you see?
Overall, I thought we played pretty well against a lot of formations. We started the game in the nickel. They were four wides, quarterback in the shotgun formation. I hate we gave up that big run, which we can talk about here in a minute, because besides that one big play, I felt like we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I agree. I think I think we shut them down pretty well. They had 212 total yards of offense. They had 178-yard run and 134-yard pass play. You take those away, and that's about half of their production. Other than that, it was a very long day. Logan Thomas, he was a quarterback. He was 5 of 26. He had some receivers drop balls, and he missed on a couple of passes. I think a better quarterback could have torched us up top a couple of times.
It's funny you mention that, because there was one play in particular where Ha-Ha had come down in the box and John Fulton was man on man, and Vinny was over there in the middle of the field covering the slot, giving help over the top to the slot receiver. And the guy gave him a stop and go move on Fulton.
Yep.
And he just overthrew him. If he had laid that ball where it needed to be, that would have been a touchdown.
That play reminded me of DeAndre White's touchdown against Michigan last year, where he's streaking down the sideline. It's a double move, and he just beats his guy for a wide open touchdown. It was very much like that. Fulton was beat very much in the same way, except for the pass was overthrown. That would have been six easy.
Oh, sure. Now, I will say, so that was obviously he bit on the move, Fulton did, but I will say, taking that one play out, which obviously, you got to have a short memory as a cornerback, sure, and that could have been 7 points, so that would have been still very important. But I thought, all in all, Fulton had a pretty good first game as a starter.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
He was very physical at the line of scrimmage in the running game, and I thought he played pretty decent.
I do, too, to, kind of be the guy that was counted on. That play stood out to me, and it could have stood out, worse had it been a score. But yeah, I think all in all that that he did play well. What did you think? You know, we saw Vinny, we saw a lot of nickel, and we saw Vinny, you know, crowding the line sometimes as the strong safety, but we saw him as the deep free safety a couple times too. I was surprised by that.
I will say that Jerick Williams looked like he knew where to be most of the time, you know, manning the star position. And so I think Jerick Williams did a pretty good job in his first game at the star position. He seemed to know where he should be. I only saw one time him and Vinny were a little bit, you know, they were not on the same page on one particular read, but I didn't see them having to move Jerick around. He seemed like he knew where he needed to be on the field at a particular point in time.
Yeah, he was quiet in his performance. I think he had a tackle or two, but I'll take quiet in stepping in as a first-time starter at a position that we talk about needing corner skills, and he's fresh off a season-ending injury to his knee, and he's a strong safety. So I'll take a quiet day by Jerick.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you were talking about these drop passes because obviously this kid's a big kid, right? 6'6", 260 pounds. I mean, he's a very opposing force at quarterback, almost like a Cam Newton figure with his frame. There was another play early in the game. They had only run 10 plays, and seven of those had been for 0 yards. And they lined up on a 3rd and 4 with triplets over to the left. And they literally drug their wide receiver on the right side to pick Mosley. And they drug their left receiver on a crisscross across the middle. And they had him matched up against Tana Patrick, which I'm not really sure why he was in the game. But they had the matchup they wanted. And the ball just got dropped.
Yep.
And my point is that he was dragging, and Tana Patrick was 5 yards away from him. And he had room to run. He could have easily gone 25 yards there. And so while the defense didn't give up anything but that one big run, like you said, other quarterbacks that we know on the schedule could have completed probably another 10 or 11 passes.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Tana had the right man conceptually, but was just well out of position to make the play and was fortunate that it was dropped. And I did notice that he was in the game, I would say, quite a bit. And early on, so that wasn't just garbage time necessarily, but we rotated, we played a lot of nickel, like, you know, like we talk about that being our base. We played a little bit of dime, but we played more what Saban calls our base, a true 3-4, than I had anticipated. And Tana was the linebacker that came in when we were in, you know, what Saban calls our base, our 3-4, almost like Nico last year. And Jarrell a couple of years ago, you know, Jarrell was our starter
right
at that linebacker spot in base, but we never played base. You know, it was almost a, I don't know, sound like a jerk, but maybe that was a punchline for a little bit. And so I wonder if that's not a similar situation here. Tana's that starting linebacker in a formation that probably we will rarely use.
That's fair. Hey, what'd you think about Ballou missing that interception in the end zone? He should have had that one, right?
You know, we had definitely he should have caught that. I thought Ha Ha had one that he should have caught. There were a couple, you know, Blues was the one that stood out the most, and certainly it was, you know, there in the end zone. But we had a couple that we could have picked off, and hopefully we'll get a little more crisp on those, and you know, we'll take the ball when they're going to give it to us.
Well, Vinny had your typical, you know, be in the right place at the right time. I thought on that big interception, you know, the timing of that couldn't have been better from a momentum standpoint. And he just really jumped that route. And Jerick was covering the slot, and Vinny was one of the two deep safeties with Ha Ha. And he got to the ball quicker. Jerick didn't even know he was there. He was surprised that he was even where he was to make the play.
Yeah, I don't know if he just read that and sort of freelanced, or if that was his man. I don't know. But
I'm thinking freelance.
I think maybe so, because he knows our, you know, he knows what's going on. He can read a quarterback and read a route. You know, I went back and watched the replay, and Chris Spielman was funny. He was talking about the receiver there, the DJ Coles, cutting off the route, and it just looked like he stopped and to let Vinny, you know, swoop in front of him and return it back for a touchdown. And it just, you know, that's just. I hate the term Vinny being Vinny, or, you know, someone being someone. That's kind of a tired phrase, but that's just Vinny going out there and doing, you know, that which it is that Vinny does.
That's why he's out there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you're not going to be able to keep him off the field.
Yeah, we need a better way of saying that, but he's a playmaker, and when he's out there, that's, you know, he makes plays and contributed, and, you know, he was out there most of the day, and I thought he had a fine day. I thought we put him in positions where he could have been stressed, you know, over the deep middle, you know, covering receivers.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
I didn't either, but it's almost like we were baiting them to pass. I don't know necessarily that we would do that, you know, when Geno comes back, and when, if we would do that against a, you know, more of a viable passing threat. I don't know if we were just kind of baiting the hook there or what. He did seem a little bit faster, at least on that touchdown return. He seemed a little quicker than what we've seen before. So maybe if that's something that that he's worked on, that'll be an asset to his game. But it was good just to see him go out there and have a big play.
It was. I was surprised from a rotation standpoint that we didn't, you know, when we ran more three linebacker set, when we ran that base nickel, it was Mosley, Priest, and Hubbard.
Yep.
When we went 3-3-5.
Yep.
And we didn't see Dixon very much. And when we did see Dixon, it was just to be a rush edger with his hand in the dirt, almost like a defensive end.
Yep.
And we heard speculation, right, that he was getting worked there some. I don't know if maybe Duvall coming on like he has is going, and maybe Dixon getting bigger. Who knows? I'll be curious to see during the season if we see Dixon matriculate more and more to a defensive end. Not that he can't play linebacker, but I'm wondering if what we saw today is a sign of things to come, that we see more Duvall Hubbard and less Dixon at that position.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's good, you know, it's going to be interesting to see some of the rotations because, you know, just like we said on the running back, it just seemed kind of discombobulated on the rotation. It didn't seem very crisp. And I think from our linebackers and defensive ends, you know, even the DL, I don't think the rotation was – we'll just need more data points to see really how it's going to play through. Now, we did see some young guys. We saw Dalvin Tomlinson in there, and he rotated in early. And so it was good to see him get some action. He set up shop in the backfield a couple of times. I thought Pagan had a really good day. Stinson had a very good day. You know, he's kind of a quiet, in terms of a fan perspective, he's kind of quiet. Everyone looks for the CJ and maybe the Pagan. And there's other names that people look for well ahead of Stinson. But he seemed to have a really good day. So that was promising. And then we saw, was it Jared Allen? Not Jared Allen. I'm blanking but the freshman defensive line slash linebacker got in there and made a couple tackles. And he looked really good too, number 93.
Oh, sure. No, I'm with you there. And I will say that from a standpoint of Dalvin Tomlinson, I was surprised he got worked in as early as he did. And he did okay. He was a big contributor to that big run. I guess this is just as good of time as any to dissect that. He was playing on the end there on that particular big 78-yard run.
Mm-hmm.
He literally let the freshman tackle look good for one of the few times that freshman right tackle looked good. I actually thought the left tackle, the true freshman, played pretty well. I was surprised at how well he played, but the right tackle looked like a redshirt freshman in his first game. But he handled Tomlinson on that play and drove him away from his point, drove him down to the center, allowed the cutback lane for the running back. And I do want to also point out that a vantage point that I didn't get in the Georgia Dome that I got on the TV was Ha-Ha just bit on the fake. On the read yes. option, I was looking on the replay in the Georgia Dome and like, man, why does it look like Ha-Ha's just behind a step? Well, when you look at the play, we're bringing up Jarek Williams off of his slot receiver to blitz the quarterback. And so we rotate Vinny over and we rotate Ha-Ha over. So we're rotating both of those guys to the wide side of the field. And then when they do that read option and he thinks he's going to hand it to the pitch man, he bites on the guy sweeping on the edge and not the fullback. And he doesn't know that the running back up the middle's got the ball until he's running away from Trey DePriest.
Yeah,
at that point, he is 5 yards out of the play, and there's no way he's going to catch him.
Yeah, that play is an example, and I looked at that one a couple of times as well. And you know, I think we both saw different different failure points, if you will, in the same play, because you have a long run like that. There's multiple failure points, and that's what stood out to me the most in watching that play is that does not happen with a stout nose guard, because they pulled the backside guard, and so. You know, like you said, Tomlinson let the freshman tackle look good. They pulled the backside guard, and he was able to get on CJ. The other guard leaked through and was able to get in front of DePriest. Now, DePriest and CJ both – CJ faster than DePriest, but they both were able to shed the block, but it was too late by then. It was a foot race by then. By the time Edmonds got to the line of scrimmage, made his cut behind those blocks – and look, all you have to do is impede someone's progress for a second and a half, and the running back's by you. And that's what happened there. And you know, looking at that play a couple of times, it just made me think that if you have the dominant nose guard, they're not able to pull and they're not able to leak through. Because you have to, you know, and maybe you can do one, but you can't do both of those things because you have to double team a truly dominant nose guard. And in that situation, they say, hey, the center's got this guy one-on-one. We can do action with both of these guards to clear out that second level. And they did. They cleared out two of our linebackers there.
No, they did. And I'll also say, going back to Fulton for a quick minute, because it is his first start, they had no wide receiver on his side. And so he crept up to the line of scrimmage as well, right? Mm-hmm. So you got him up on the line of scrimmage on the far right. You got Jerick Williams blitzing on the left. I mean, it all came together perfect for them. But even on that play, at the camera angle, John Fulton is very slow to react.
Yep.
That the ball is being handed off up the middle. My point is, a D. Milner maybe reacts quicker because of his veteran leadership last year, and tackles the guy 15 yards down the field and saves the touchdown.
Yeah,
and so we had slow reaction from a couple different people.
Well, and what this is, and you'll hear coaches say this, and you'll hear commentators say this, that you have to have enough reps to trust your eyes. You know, because they talk about keys. You know, key on this, key on this, and so you know, no doubt John Fulton saw the key. You know, that this is a running play. He hesitated there, you know, maybe didn't trust his eyes, where a Milner with a lot of reps says, there's my key, go. And Fulton maybe said, oh, that's my key.
I got to make sure I got the boundary.
And in that heartbeat, you know, we're talking about a second and a half, you know, the guard blocking the linebacker and a corner coming up reading his key, you know, that heartbeat that he's off. And then all of that happens on the same play. That's how you get a 78 yard. I mean, come on, you don't – a lot. There's a lot of failure points, and I kind of circle back to that, and especially against our defense, right? Because I do think our defense is good, and outside of that run, I thought we played very well on Saturday. And so you have multiple failure points, and they all kind of conspired against us on that one play. Now, we can go back and watch other plays in the game where they run for 5 yards, and we can find a failure point, but we don't find three.
No, we don't. And I will say that back to Ed Stinson for a quick second, right? He's our Brandon Dietrich. He's the guy that is just going to set the edge, and he is going to be reliable at the point of attack. He's not going to get driven down, right, like Dalvin Tomlinson did on that play.
Right.
And Stinson just happened to be out of the game getting a breather at that point. Yep. But I did like the play of the young guys. I like the play, for the most part, of Tomlinson. A'shaun Robinson, I thought, did okay when he was in the game. And I was actually – Brandon Ivory showed me more than I thought I would see. Is he Jesse Williams? No. Is he going to be? No. And so he's going to have competition from A'shaun Robinson all season long. But I thought that him losing a few pounds, he looked a couple steps quicker to me in this ball game.
Yeah, I agree. His body composition from, you know, 3 years ago is just amazingly, you know, different. And, you know, he's still a nose guard, and so he's still going to be big. I did not watch that position, and maybe it was just where our seats were. I did not, and I didn't have my binoculars, and so I didn't watch the nose as much as I would like to. But I only remember I saw Darren Lake, A'shaun Robinson, and we're talking about Ivory. I did not spot Kervin in there, but that doesn't mean he did not play. Did you spot him at all?
Kervin was not in the participation report. Okay. He did not play.
And I was trying to look at that as I was saying it, but I had already shut that down. So that's interesting. You know, we get into that rotation. It did very much look like the second nose off the bench was true freshman Ashawn Robinson. So that'll be something that'll be interesting to watch. Like I said, Darren Lake got some run, but he was not the first nose off the bench that I saw.
Well, you know, speaking of rotation real quick, were you surprised? I mean, we've already talked about Tana Patrick being in there in the formation that he was. But I was surprised you didn't see Reuben Foster until very late. I was surprised you didn't see Reggie Ragland until very late.
Yeah, Reuben Foster and Ragland, I know that they were in early on teams, but not in the defensive rotation. And, you know, the sense that I got, and I don't know if this is something that we were doing strategically, you know, because the game was in hand, but we seemed to play our starters, offense and defense, much further into the game than we have in seasons past. I understand that on offense because we're trying to find some rhythm, but on defense, I was surprised that we didn't, you know, and once we got later in the game, you know, we did rotate and we did see some more freshmen, but we seemed to be sort of our base, you know, rotating between our starting base, our starting nickel, and our starting dime. That's a lot of different players shuffling in and out, but that's not getting deep into the bench, which is what you're asking. And I don't know why. I don't know why we didn't do that. I expected to see a lot more Reuben Foster, a lot more Jonathan Allen's, the guy that I missed earlier. He came in late, yeah, but didn't see much of him. I'm kind of surprised by that.
Even like a Ryan Anderson, right? I mean, these are guys that you would have thought, you know, give them some reps, give Dylan Lee some work. You know, you saw Dylan Lee and Reggie Ragland on special teams, which we'll cover in a minute. But all four of those guys, I thought we'd see more from them. So I was surprised. Landon Collins, you know, seems like he came in just in the star formation. Excuse me, in the dime formation. And when he was in there, he seemed to know where he needed to be.
Yep.
He didn't really flash. I don't know if there was an opportunity for him to flash.
Not on defense, he didn't.
But he was quiet on defense, kind of like Jerick Williams was.
Yes. Yeah. Which sometimes I'll take that from a defensive back. If you don't hear a defensive back's name, you know, sometimes that's mostly a good thing.
Anything else that jumped out at you on defense? I felt like, you know, I was even checking out the coach's show after the game, and he talked about how they ran more read option than they had prepared for.
Yep.
They ran way more of that, and there was a lot of, you know, when they were running the read option, they were even doing it with the H-back in the backfield and two other guys in the backfield. There were times they had four guys in the backfield along with, you know, including the quarterback.
Yeah,
and so they had some very interesting formations they were running.
They really did. I don't know that I would call it, you know, an I-bone or you know, a Notre Dame box, you know, quite, you know, per se. But they had some different formations with a lot of different, you know, potential ball carriers in the backfield. So I thought that was interesting. You know, trying to be creative, trying to maybe catch us off rhythm, leaning the other way. I thought, as a whole, our defense played very, very well. I thought we were very athletic up front. And what I look forward to is actually our defense improving as Geno comes back and works himself back into the rotation.
Oh, absolutely. Who gets your mini game ball on defense?
Well, and, you know, for all the reasons that that we've kind of called out, I'm giving it to Jerick Williams. He came in off of injury, didn't play at all last season, came in to man the star position, which, you know, we talk about that being a corner position, and he's a strong safety. And so in some respects, we're asking him to do something that's athletically out of his repertoire, but he had a couple of tackles, seemed to be in the right place consistently, and didn't have his name called for one going the other way.
No, that's true. That's a good call on your part. I will have to give it to Ed Stinson. I know you're going to tell me he's not a mini game ball.
No, I knew you were going to go with him.
But we have to have a guy like him, and this team needs it, and we've got to have that steady Eddie. And so his stat line, you know, he finished with five tackles for loss and, you know, one sack and eight tackles on the day, two solos and six assists. And so I thought he had a very good ball game.
We had a write-in vote. Jonathan, one of our longtime listeners, emailed And he gave his recommendation for defensive men in game ball for John Fulton. Why don't you, Jonathan, you put yourself out there. So, Tommy, why don't you grade that selection?
You know, I think John Fulton, as we talked about, with the exception of the one pass play where he bit on the stop and go, I thought he was physical at the point of attack. He played the run very well, and he was aggressive with the wide receivers. I thought that he was pretty active in the game. You know, he finished with 5 tackles, 1 tackle for loss. And so I thought he played pretty well. I think he's got to trust his reads, like you were talking about. And he's got to know when he doesn't have help over the top. And so on that one play that should have been a touchdown, he's got to know, and it's only his first start, but he's got to know that there are 2 wides to the field side and that Vinny's over there. He's got to know that Ha-Ha is up in the box and that he's got no help over the top. And yep. So he's got to know that I'm going to give him room. And if he completes a 10-yard out route, okay, but I'm not giving up a 50-yard post pattern.
Yeah. I've got help where he's making that move.
Yes.
So don't bite on that move necessarily. I think it was a good pick. And for all the reasons that you spelled out, I think that's a fine mini game ball. So we certainly participate, Jonathan, you know, emailing us over the weekend and letting us know. I think what stood out to me, and if I'm a harsh grade, then I respect that. But that that miss on that double move that could have gone and against other quarterbacks would go for a touchdown. I think maybe that was the difference in me selecting Jarek. But he played very well. And if that's his sort of platform from which he grows from this season, then I'm very excited about the potential that he has for us.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, let's go to special teams. Give me your thoughts on that group. There's a lot to talk about.
Well, you know, I think it's what they call burying the lead. If we're going to jump into special teams, you know, not enough good things can be said about Christian Jones. 77-yard punt return, a 94-yard kickoff return. He has some other returns in there for positive yardage as well. He had 256 total yards, a tremendous day, scored 3 touchdowns 3 different ways. You know, it was 21-10, right? Christian Jones over Vatek.
Over Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Did I hear right that since Alabama's been keeping stats, this is the first time one player has returned both a punt and a kickoff for a touchdown?
Yeah, I think I saw maybe first time ever, maybe first time since the 50s. I think it's been the first time in all of our – the first time since 2006 in all of college football. So that's a mighty lot of games in which someone scored a touchdown via the 3 avenues that Christian Jones did. So that's a pretty impressive stat. And one thing that I kind of, you know, I kind of hit you in the elbow almost kidding, but, you know, it's a positive statement as well. I think if we were to list our wide receivers, starting with Amari and working through some of the other guys, we might would have said that, you know, behind a Norwood, behind a Bell, behind a DeAndre, that Christian Jones is our 5th most explosive wide receiver. I don't know if maybe we don't need to recalibrate that count, but he was certainly explosive on Saturday.
Well, I think we touched on the fact with Christian Jones, his versatility, right? And the fact that he can line up in so many different positions. And like, remember the play where we line him in the slot to the left and we drag him behind the line of scrimmage out in the flats and he's out there before the cornerback knows it? And they did that pass in the game for like a 15-yard completion. I mean, he gets opportunities to line up all over the field, and that's not what you're going to see from Kevin Norwood, and that's not what you're going to see from the other wide receivers, not even Cooper. And maybe he's just tired of hearing all this, you know. He hears all the same things we do, right?
Sure.
He's like, hey, don't forget about me over here, guys.
Yep.
I'm still here.
Yep.
And, you know, we didn't even touch on it with the offensive part about the big touchdown that he had there. So, I mean, he had a hell of a ball game, and I'm glad to see it for the kid.
He really did. Now, let me pose a question. Sounds like I'm going the other way, but just to put a thought into play, we talked about in the preseason special teams really giving Christian Jones, and we did at the time, and we did in the preseason as well, you know, him coming off cold against LSU in the national title game. Well, that was played in the dome down there in New Orleans, and certainly he had a great day Saturday in the Georgia Dome. Do you think, again, 2 data points, I'm not drawing conclusions, I'm asking a question, do you think that he just prefers fielding those high balls in a dome stadium?
Well, it makes you wonder if he can judge him better, right?
Yep.
Because we have been a little bit frustrated at his decision-making process of where he fields certain balls at in certain punt situations. So he definitely could just be more comfortable with the environment that the Dome presents.
Yep. So that'll be something to watch. I think we kidded that, you know, he has sealed up the starting return job through week six, almost regardless of what he does. And so it'll be interesting to see. DeHart got some run, filled in punts as well. So that was good to see. I think we kind of expected that he would be in the rotation. We thought maybe some of the younger guys, again, we're not going to see everything in week one. And so just because we didn't see it doesn't mean we're not. We just fielded a number of punts from them. Christian Jones was having a day that you couldn't take him off the field. And then, you know, when we did, we brought in D, who was the next guy up. So,
well, hey, I will mention real quick on that punt return. He really made three guys miss. You know, if we're going to be our usual nitpicky self, I think both of the gunners dropped the ball on that play. Literally, whenever the gunners were releasing, they just thoroughly missed. They missed the opportunity to get their guys on the play. And so Kenny Bell did not do his job. Kevin Norwood did not do his job. And so they released the gunners. DeAndre White was in the middle of the field. He couldn't get to him in time. And so Christian Jones had both gunners on him within his five-yard boundary, and he made both of them miss. And so that was kind of all him. But while I beat up on Kenny Bell, because Kenny Bell started the play off wrong, he recovered in the middle of the field and ran down the field and made the key block at the 15-yard line to allow Christian Jones to score a touchdown. Yeah, so I just wanted to point that out real quick, that he screwed up and he came back to redeem himself.
Well, and I love that, right? Because on the kickoff return, you have a very similar situation, you know, where C.J. Mosley's saying that the guy that had, you know, and there were two guys that got their hands on Jones, they just did not wrap up. And C.J. Mosley, and we've talked about his character and, you know, his leadership. And he says, well, you know, I feel redeemed because the guy that I missed, my responsibility blocking, I missed him. And Christian was able to get away from him. But then you also see Mosley running down the sideline assisting. And he can't get all the way around in front, but you see him running down the field and then just getting an arm, kind of an arm bar over the defender that's trying to come across. And again, it's just that split second that he slows down the defender that allows full speed Christian Jones to get by. And so on both of those, I did not see the Kenny Bell, but it's cool to hear those types of stories, because you have these seniors, these upperclassmen, you know, players, you know, demonstrating why they're out on the field and what they can contribute to special teams. So that's impressive.
Well, hey, man, I don't think we need to do a mini game ball. It's pretty obvious, right?
Well, yeah, I think, and I think Jonathan, who emailed us, talked about you better give a mini game ball to Christian Jones while he can still fit in it, which I thought was funny. But, yeah, I think you have to give hats off to Christian Jones there. I'll call out Landon Collins. He had a couple of big tackles on special teams, and so he looked really good in that facet of the game. And I'll go Cody Mandale. He averaged 42 yards punting. He had 9 attempts, and he tied a career long of 61 yards. And Tommy, I went back and looked it up. 9 punts. If you go back, there was a 4-game span in both 2011 and 2012. So in the last two seasons, there were 4-game spans in which he did not have 9 punts. And so we might need to ice his leg.
Well, maybe he's trying to push Christian Jones for that mini game ball. I do have something. One other thing I want to point out on special teams. Well, I guess I want to touch on that for a quick second.
Sure, bring it up.
Cody Mandale and his development, right? What was he, 32, 33 yards a kick 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. This is Saban, right? This is what Saban does with special teams and with punters. And his ability to be there right now and to change field position by averaging 46 yards a punt is just phenomenal. And so he's one of those guys that we didn't notice in the game. Why? Because he was just doing what we've now grown to expect him to do.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, 2 years ago, it'd be like, damn, he just kicked a 46-yard punt. Well, now he's averaging that, or you know, that's just awesome.
Yeah, he's averaging near that. Yeah.
I wanted to touch on the kickoff duties. You know, we didn't get to see a field goal attempt, so we didn't get to see who would come out there for the short field goal, long field goal stuff that we do at Alabama. I noticed on the first couple of kickoffs that Cade Foster dropped the ball at like the 3 and 4 yard line. And in both of those plays, the speed of our coverage, which is phenomenal, was tackling them at the 16 and 17 yard line. I do think Cade Foster can put it in the end zone now that we're kicking off the ball from where we are. Do you think we are intentionally kicking the ball short of the goal line so that we can get a couple yards of field position by making teams start behind the 20-yard line?
I don't think it's worth the risk. I would have to say no, because you're hoping that you can tackle them at the 12 or 15. To me, it doesn't seem worth the risk. You know, kick in the end zone. Let's not have any live action on the kick in which they could return, or we could have a player hurt and they get the ball in the 20. Everyone's all right with that. I don't see us doing that as strategy.
Okay. Now, obviously, Cade Foster only had 3 of the kickoffs. Adam Griffith had the other 3. Did you notice that Adams were just a little bit longer?
A little bit, but they still didn't go in the end zone. And, you know, it's pristine conditions inside.
You know, you're going to do it. Now's the time to do it, right?
Yeah. You would think no crosswinds, no kicking into the wind, all of those things that we'll start to see. So, yeah, I think you go out there and you kick it as far as you can, and you put it out of the end zone if you can. Take it completely out of play. I think that's the safest, you know, Saban way of doing something like that. And so if we're not doing it, I think it's because we can't do it. Okay. And I will say this about Cade, and I hate to kind of pick on a guy that didn't play, but, you know, I watched him a little bit during warmups, and he lined up, I was going to say a 27 yard kick, but he had the ball on the 10. So that would have been a 20 yard kick. Because he was kicking from that position, not it being snapped from that position. So I was going to say 27, but he had the ball set up on the 20. And so he was kicking, I'm sorry, on the 10. And so he was kicking from the 10, which you count the end zone is 20. And that was his last kickoff, or his last practice kick going, you know, to the sidelines before the game started. And boy, he missed it bad. And I thought, man, let him kick another one to get some good vibrations going over the field. And so I was watching to see, you know, when he came out, how he did. But, you know, we didn't need him. Fortunately, the game wasn't close enough to actually need that type of kick. But yeah, he shanked a 20 yarder pretty badly.
Wow, man, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's not. I'm going to say this, and I didn't know where to work this in on, you know, defense, you know, offense or special teams. So I'm going to say this. This game reminds me of, and so I'm going to kind of carry us back in kind of the way back machine, not too many years, but 2008. And so we went undefeated in 2008 into the Georgia Dome to play Florida. And, you know, we would have gone to play for the title had we beat Florida that year. But there was a game, I think week 6 of that season, we played Kentucky. And so 2008, we played Kentucky in Tuscaloosa. It's a nice hot, you know, mid-October afternoon, and that game ends 17-14, and the game was never really that close. We held the ball longer. You know, our defense was pretty stout. They had a couple of big plays, but they had 2 300-pound defensive tackles, Ventrell Jenkins and Myron Pryor, that just gave us fits, and our offense was just kind of off gear all day. And so what's interesting to me is I look at that 17-14 ball game, and you look at this 35-10 ball game. If you take away the 21 points that we got, special teams and defense return for a touchdown, we're talking about a 14-10 game. And so that's very similar to that 17-14 game. This game very much, and it didn't dawn on me while we were watching it play out, but it's just kind of the weekend kind of played through, and I watched some of the action again. It just very much reminded me of that game against Kentucky. So I just wanted to throw that out there, you know, not for anything, but just that's what this game reminded me of.
Interesting. Now, that's an interesting analogy. I had not thought about that, but yeah, Christian Jones was definitely a big part of this victory. And I remember after the game, you and I looked at each other and said, this might be the most disappointing 25-point victory that we remember as fans witnessing.
Yeah, you know, you kind of run the risk of just being a, you know, I want to keep this family friendly, but you know, a jackass, you know, because,
right,
you know, you beat the team 35-10 and I was disappointed. And you think, you know, you shouldn't be disappointed when you beat a team by 25 and you cover the spread and all that. But, you know, there's more to it than, you know, you play to a standard, right? And you know, maybe I'm brainwashed or whatever it is, but, you know, you play to a standard. And so 35-10 certainly is nice, and that's a nice score, and it proclaims well. And when we get into November, we'll look at this and think of it differently than we look at it now. But during the game and, you know, even just after the game, I was just disappointed. I expected, you know, you could give me the same score, but let us put together a couple of 10-play drives. I would gladly trade those explosive kick returns for 2 10-play drives.
Yes, because the way it worked out, right, this was a very boring game in the second half. I mean, yeah, for all intents and purposes, the action was in the first half. If you take out Christian Jones' touchdown in the second half, this was a pretty boring damn game after halftime.
Yeah. You know, if you would have told me we were going to score 21 points on special teams, I would have said we'd score in the 50s. you know, so –
I'm with you.
21 on defense and special teams. But, I mean, you see what I'm saying. You know, 14-point production on offense, I'm a little disappointed. If that puts me in the jackass category, then, you know, I'm a jackass for my team then.
No, I'm with you there. Well, hey, man, I'm looking forward to the next show where we can break down some Texas A&M pregame.
Yeah, we're going to try to put together something leading into that game. We'll get another week of their action. They play Sam Houston State. And we'll get to not necessarily draw conclusions from that game, but we'll have a chance to come back and talk about what we're expecting when we play the Johnny Fighting Manziels. So that'll be fun. So we'll do that next week. We'll get that show out next week. But this has been fun. So glad that the season is here. The season is upon us. It's been wall-to-wall football in my house this weekend, and it's very exciting to have the season back. So it'll be February before you know it, so sit down and enjoy a few minutes of football, because it'll be gone before we know it.
Absolutely.
Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. We certainly enjoy you listening in. Greatly appreciate it. The number one greatest thing that you can do to support the show is to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a comment in iTunes. That helps us in the rankings in iTunes. I think we're ranked pretty well under college football, but we can get some groundswell from all our listeners, and we can certainly promote ourselves on that ranking. So that would be my challenge to our fans. If you really enjoy what we're doing here, then go into iTunes, subscribe to us, or subscription counts are up, and leave us a genuine, honest comment, and we greatly appreciate it. With that, roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, roll Tide.